I still remember the day Leonard Bernstein died, just as I remember the feeling of loss the day Miles Davis passed, or the Sunday morning in Mexico City when I heard the news that Herbert von Karajan had died. These musicians were important, not just to me, but to the world, and it's why so many still preface their remarks about Bernstein with, "I can't believe it's been this long." As I write this, it has been almost a quarter century. Many words and phrases are commonly used to describe Bernstein: larger than life, passionate, creative, charming, traditionalist, modernist. All true, but not one of them is all-encompassing. He was much too complicated for simple sound bites, and that's why I've gathered some thoughts from three musicians whom Bernstein impacted with his desire to help others find their way. He did this, of course, for many of us through his Young People's Concerts and his Norton Lectures. In the case of David Amram, Maurice Paris, and Carl St. Clair, he gave each a jumpstart in the music profession, recognition of the talent he saw in each of them. David Amram praises Bernstein for his generous heart and his willingness to listen to others.
I saw that when I was the composer in residence with the Philharmonic, how he would always take the time to speak to any young conductor or composer or instrumentalist or music fan in the green room, which is usually sort of like trying to enter into the White House or something. Anybody could walk up there and say hello to Leonard Bernstein. And the management of the orchestra at that time, when I was there in 1966, 67, really were kind of offended because he would stand there and talk for an hour after the concert with anybody that came up and give them all attention. And I remember one time someone came up and said, "Mr. Bernstein, my uncle plays the trombone." And I saw the manager of the Philharmonic start to shudder, saying, "Oh my goodness, this person is going to take away time and some subscriber or person of value might be offended and walk away." So Lenny's response was, "I love the trombone." And he gave a whole 10-minute talk about all the great trombone solos from the Russian Easter Overture down the line, all the wonderful literature that uses the trombone in different ways. And he was that way with anybody and everybody. Sometimes when the concerts were over, I would talk to him and he would say, "What did you think of the performance?" I'd say, "God, I thought it was terrific." And he said, "Didn't you hear bar 17 where the cellos came in a sloppy way?" I said, "No, I didn't notice it." He said, "Well, you should have." He said, "I noticed it and it was my fault."
A number of years ago, I asked David how he got to know Bernstein, and in particular, how he came to be the New York Philharmonic's first composer in residence.
A friend of mine, who has been the best man at my wedding later on, I'd known, was had a PhD in anthropology and law, but was kind of an eccentric character, so he became the number one Greenwich Village bartender. He said, "David," he said, "I can show you everything you need to know in 4 days. He said, "You know all the people in the village and all the actors you know from working Shakespeare in the Park and the film scores and all the freelance symphony players and jazz players and folk players and painters and artists working with Kerouac and all those people you have. You could have a great following as a bartender and make enough in tips in 2 days to support yourself well for the march and have 5 days just to be a composer." I said, "Okay." He said, "You don't need a book. You come down, work behind the stick." That meant be on the other side of the bar. "And I'll show you all the technical stuff you need to know." So one day before I was going to go to get my new career as a bartender started, I got a note in the mail saying the New York Philharmonic is initiating a new program called a Composer in Residence from the Rockefeller Foundation. And you've been one of the, I think, 200 composers who have been chosen to submit something. Well, I had a big package. I sent out my stuff all different places, and it always came back, usually unopened, but with no particular interest. I thought, well, heck, I got the package. I'll just make a new label. Why not? And I sent it off, and I got a letter saying I'd been chosen as the first composer to resident for the New York Philharmonic. I thought, well, maybe it's a practical joke. because I'd never had a grant, and I was considered to be not even an outcast in the classical music establishment of composers, but like a non, what Charles Mingus titled his book, Beneath the Underdog, which was okay because I was doing what I loved to do and I didn't expect anything except to hope to get better at it. And I couldn't believe it. So then they wrote me another letter, and then it was announced that I was going to be that. I couldn't, I mean, it was like beyond belief. So I was at the Max's Kansas City bar celebrating, and someone at the bar said, there's Leonard Bernstein walking by. And Leonard Bernstein was walking by, and he kind of looked in the bar to see what was happening because he loved to hang out and see different things. So I went out and I said, Mr. Bernstein, I want to thank you for choosing me. He said, who are you, please? And I said, I'm David Aaron. He said, oh, my goodness, I haven't seen you in 5 years. He said, congratulations, I love your music, and we're going to have a great time. And then he said, what kind of a place is this? I said, well, it's a great lot. At that time, before the Andy Warhol had moved in, it was a painters, poets, musicians, just a nice neighborhood bar. And he walked in and sat at the bar, and nobody bothered him, because it was just a place in New York where people hung out and respected each other. We had a good time talking. He said, well, I'll see you in 2 weeks. So 2 weeks later, I got a brand new suit and got all cleaned up and became the first composer in residence with the New York Philharmonic. And it was so wonderful spending that year and watching him work and seeing his devotion to music and how much he cared for the musicians and how he treated everybody to bring out the best in them and make them feel good.
David Amram was composer in residence with the New York Philharmonic during the 1966-67 season. By that time, David was already a good friend of the aspiring trumpet player and conductor Maurice Paris. When Paris became the conductor of the Austin Symphony in 1970, he brought with him a stack of fanfares he had requested of a number of his friends. These served the festive nature of Paris's short tenure with the Austin Symphony. Among those several fanfares was a short piece by David Amram. The following season, David came to Austin as a soloist in his own triple concerto. That was my first time to meet him, and we have sustained a friendship ever since.